This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
We asked our hosts what Heritage Radio Network means to them. Listen in to hear what they had to say.
Hi, everybody. This is Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm here to tell you why I love Heritage Radio. It's all Dave Tatasciore, 100%. It's what keeps me coming back every Thursday. I pretend it's the pizza. I pretend it's the bomb squad, but it's Dave.
Do your part to keep Heritage Radio Network alive by supporting our summer drive at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome to HR and Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson, and I'm here with my co-host, Katie Mosman-Rodler.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Feeling a little under the weather today, so sorry if my voice sounds weird. I'm pulling an Ira Glass.
I know, but the show must go on, Kat.
Absolutely.
Kat was like, can I stay home today? And I was like, no, come in and do the show.
Not really. So just pitch my voice a little, David, so that sound normal.
Okay, I'm on it. Yeah.
So we're going to start this week with some rapid fire headlines from our shows this past week. And then, I'm going to share a little bit about my trip to Denver last weekend.
And, before we get into that, I want to introduce our special in studio guests who, if you've ever had an avocado toast, we're pretty sure you've maybe heard of them. We have Henry Roberts. Welcome, Henry.
Hi.
And also Giles Russell. Hi, Giles.
G'day.
From, Two Hands Restaurant and Bar. You may have been able to tell that they're Australian. But these guys have an elevated coffee selection, a warm atmosphere, and fresh cuisine over at Two Hands. And we're really excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Stoked to be here.
We are excited, too. So they're going to tell us a little bit more about themselves and how their Australian culture influences their food and the cozy cafe style. And as always, you know me. We are going to wrap it up with some trivia questions, and it's going to be American and Australia themed.
Yeah. So get ready. But first, as always, we have the HRN headlines for the week. David, can you cue up our stressful news music? Here we go. So this week on Cooking Issues, Dave and Nastasia are back to offer us a plethora of information to help us further feed our heads. They discuss the merits or demerits of having old school arcade games in bars. Also, quote-unquote alternative ketchups, xanthan gum, adding habanero peppers to buttercream frosting, the dress code at Roberta's, that's a really special segment, welding, seltzer, vacuum sealing garlic, Fahrenheit versus Celsius measurements in cooking, and also, of course, an update on the Spinzall. So, as always, a hyper-focused episode of Cooking Issues. Tune in if you want to hear about one particular thematic
they get content.
Laser focus.
I did see a picture that he posted at the Spinzall, so it's like it's getting real. I think you can order it again now.
Cool.
They're in production.
Nice.
On the food scene, we gather around the smoldering embers emanating from Meta, a cozy wood-fired restaurant in Brooklyn's Fort Greene. Chef Noberto Pietoni and owner Henry Rich work without gas to create an atmosphere lit up by menu highlights like slow-roasted lamb, smoked carrots, charred beets, short rib steaks with chimichurri, and a sweet potato dessert cooked in ash. Once the smoke clears, you'll also find a full gamut of complex and layered flavors developed through exploratory forms of fermentation, pickling, and curing, constructing a whole new power source for their food and glowing aura. I'm especially excited about this episode because I'm going to Meta tonight.
I'm jealous. Yeah. Also, big shout out to Meta for being part of our Charity Buzz auction during our summer membership drive. We're super grateful, and we hope that you will all go enjoy some amazing wood-fired treats there. So as the future of school lunch becomes an even more pressing issue than typical, this week on Japan Eats, Akiko is joined by Atsuko Quirk, who's a documentary filmmaker and environmental activist. Her recent short documentary, School Lunch in Japan, has over 9 million views on YouTube and has been widely inspirational, showing the importance of quality of the mealtime to many in shaping a public school community. And it's really cool to see kind of different school lunch approaches around the world. I got to see some school lunches in Italy last summer, and with what I've seen of the documentary trailer, school lunch in Japan is also a very thoughtful time where they're incorporating students into kind of all aspects of the meal prep. So I think that we should take some notes from them.
And speaking of food and community, this week's Eat Your Words, Kathy Irway is joined by sociologist Michael Carillon, author of the book No One Eats Alone. His book looks at how injecting empathy into our foodscapes is key to equitable and sustainable food, which we care a lot about. He argues that we need to change our relationship with food by getting to know the people who grow, pick, slaughter, transport, package, cook, market, and sell what we eat.
And finally, on Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, we are joined by the team of New York City's first annual Food Waste Fair, including the chef Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Co. So this event is coming up on July 25th at the Brooklyn Expo Center. They're going to showcase a soup-to-nuts approach to food waste prevention, recovery, and recycling. And everybody should definitely go check this out. I got to go to a preview, which had some amazing food waste-related treats, including these amazing whey popsicles from White Mustache. So go there for popsicles and also to learn about food waste in New York City. So with that, we're going to talk about some more events. Kat, can you start off and tell us about your trip to Denver and everything that happened at Slow Food Nations?
Well, it was a whirlwind trip. I left on Friday night and got in really early Saturday morning, and was there Saturday and Sunday for a few panels and interviewing some really awesome people that were involved. This was the first Slow Food Nations. It was an international festival hosted by Slow Food USA in Denver. It was my first time in Denver, and it's a great city. I really want to go back.
What sound effect is
that? I'm not sure what that's supposed to be. Oh, maybe? I did drink some beer while I was there. That took me a second.
Sounded like a penguin.
He was shaking his head.
We really missed that.
It's a bong, guys. It's a bong.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to give myself away.
I did walk into a dispensary, but with 2 days, I'm like, that was not something that I was going to get into. I did go to Crooked Stave and have really good sour beer. But back to the festival. Some of my favorite people that I interviewed were Howard Conyers, who is a South Carolina whole hog pit master by night. By day, he is a NASA scientist. He was so cool, and I'm excited to share that interview. And we recorded some awesome panels as well. It was a great weekend full of really good food. And I want to thank Liz for helping me with getting those panels and interviews ready to be put online for everyone to listen to.
Thanks, girl. I got you.
Did you see Jack Johnson?
I did not see Jack Johnson.
But you have the same last name.
I know. We're related.
I mean,
I see him at the family reunion.
Okay. I saw that he did a special dinner for the Good Food 100. Sarah Brito posted some photos with him. So I was looking for you in the pictures.
I was running all over the place trying to get this all done. Shout out to my boyfriend Will for coming with me and helping me out, because it was a lot to do in a short amount of time.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah. So yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm glad to have you back.
Me too.
Every time you go away now, since you got back from Italy, I'm like, no, don't go.
I'm staying put for a while, thank goodness.
Okay, good. Well, guys, Restaurant Week is coming up, so you better get on Open Table ASAP to get your reservations. The week is starting between the 24th and August 18th, but that's because Restaurant Week is a lot longer than one actual week. So you should check out the listing. They've got some favorites on there, Gotham Bar and Grill, Scarpetta, but also some newcomers on the list like Mission Chinese, Wolfgang Puck's Cut, Feast, Porcena, and Union Square Hospitality's Untitled. And it's going to be a delicious week/4 weeks?
Yeah.
So get on there. It's a good time to try some restaurants that might be kind of out of your normal price range for a weekday. Also, extra shout outs to Porcena, because I ate there again the other night. It's on 7th Street. It's actually just like two doors down from Jimmy's number 43. Jimmy Carboni hosts Beer Sessions Radio and Heritage Radio Network. Also,
Hey.
That Jimmy.
Hey,
so you can go
I'm
to
Jimmy
Porcena
Carboni
and have like amazing homemade pasta and delicious meats and charcuterie and like cheese. And then you can go over to Jimmy's and have some really cool beers poured from his very clean tap lines. He's part of the Clean Beer Project. And I just saw he posted his lines being cleaned again the other day. Anyway, but also Sarah Jenkins from Porcena is doing the food for my wedding. So I'm really super excited. So I've been studying by going there to eat pasta.
And this is Hannah. I am the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here to talk about money. So there are only 12 days left of our summer fun drive, which is ending on July 31st. We want to say thank you to everyone who donated to help us reach our $20,000 goal, but we still have about $4,000 to go, and we need your help. HRN and all of your favorite shows are made possible by contributions from listeners like you, and of course our amazing sponsors. If you haven't already, please open your computer or phone and head on over to heritageradionetwork.org. Click the beating heart at the top right corner of your screen and make a tax-deductible donation. Yeah. You'll be ensuring that the world's only food radio station stays on the air and in your earbuds. Thanks in advance.
Yay. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate you.
All right, now we want to welcome once again our two guests today, Henry Roberts and Giles Russell of Two Hands. For those of you who don't know, there is both a Two Hands Cafe in Nolita and a Two Hands Restaurant and Bar in Tribeca. The menus take inspiration from Australian cuisine, serving nutritious and balanced foods that are meant to be enjoyed with friends. Love that. Through Australian cuisine and a warm atmosphere, Giles and Henry create a new community space for their guests to escape to. Two Hands has also been featured in notable media outlets, including the New York Times, Bon Appetit, New York Magazine's Grub Street, and Vogue.com. Fancy. Good day, guys.
Good day.
Good day, mate.
Oh, you were dying
Let's
to play that.
Let's put another shrimp on the barbie.
Oh.
Was that Dave?
Oh, no.
That's Dumb and Dumber.
Okay, well, Henry and Giles, I want to start off just asking you about your culinary background and also how the two of you met.
Our culinary background doesn't go too deep experience-wise, but we both have a very good eye and love for food, and we've always loved to cook from home. We've had a little bit of experience. We had a little bit of experience before we opened in the catering business and also in bars and restaurants and cafes back home. But we like to kind of consider ourselves as a bit of all-rounders. And we call it like the cafe man or the calfman. and we still to this day can't really remember exactly when we met for the first time, but we did know each other from back home. And our circle of friends did know each other, and we kind of, you know, saw it as you do in Sydney. It is a biggish city, but it becomes such a small town when you grow up there that everyone, once you leave school, especially, kind of interrelates, and you know, you see the same girls from the same schools, and you go out at the same places, and so you kind of all interrelate. And so we met a few times through friends of friends and whatnot.
Henry was in a very popular band for about 3 months there, which had probably 3.5 gigs, of which I attended.
Was it AC/DC?
All of them. He was a side band for the side band to AC/DC. we attended those, and Henry told me he was off to the States on a road trip, and then he landed in New York, and when I arrived 6 months later, he was one of the first people I gave a shout out to, and we met up for a beer in Brooklyn, and I asked him what he was up to, and he said he was working in a bar in Soho and had an idea to open a cafe with really good coffee and some good sourdough bread. And I said I was on that bandwagon as well, and I wanted to open a cafe. And so 2 years of putting our heads down and asking a million and one questions to all the right people and some wrong people. and we opened the cafe. And I think we just like to cook at home and make simple food, pretty vegetable forward. Avocado toast is two ingredients, one bread and one avocado. So, I think our love of food and our enjoyment of cooking it just was born from cooking at home. So we just wanted to bring that to a little corner of Soho.
What's the story behind the name Two Hands?
The name itself, it kind of... as you do when you're naming anything, a dog, a band, a cafe, you go through a million and one ideas, and we were trying to like mash our names together, mash our mum's middle names together, and we came up with a million and one different ideas, and I remember being at work and I was behind the bar and Two Hands came into my head, and then shortly after the movie came into my head, which not everyone knows, but it's Heath Ledger's first like feature film, which was set in Sydney, in King's Cross mainly. And featuring Rose Byrne as well. Shout out to Rose Byrne. Love her.
Who doesn't?
and it's this great kind of cult film now. So I was like, oh, that'll be a great homage to home, but it's not in your face. Mm-hmm. You know,
we wanted to be Australian, but not like obviously Australian. We didn't want to call ourselves like the Koala Cafe, but it was obvious that like everything that we were doing was born and like inspired by Australia. You don't live in Australia for 24 years and then not be like inspired by it. And also we found that moving to New York, there wasn't anywhere that was like our cafes at home. Just like a really easy place to stop off in the morning or at lunchtime and get a coffee and like a really simple, healthy bite to eat. There was a whole bunch of good coffee shops and they could get a croissant or a donut and obviously a whole bunch of incredible restaurants in New York, but most of them like serve terrible coffee. And so we just kind of wanted to, join the two together, like simple good food with good coffee in a really casual environment. And Two Hands spoke to that because we wanted to make the coffee ourselves. So I was using Two Hands to do that, make the food ourselves. We also like had a big interest in like design and build. So we wanted to build the cafe ourselves, which we did. It was just Henry and I and like one Albanian contractor. And we did it, and it took 4 months to pull Two Hands Cafe together. And so it really like, it was born of Two Hands, the idea from Henry and the inspiration of like Heath Ledger and his cafe Five Leaves in Brooklyn, which we both loved. And, Heath growing up was definitely like an inspiration for any Aussie kid. He was a movie star. So it was, paying homage to him. But then also the fact that like if you do something with your own two hands, it means you really like put your all into it. You put like a bit of love into it. No one makes like a cake with their two hands or a house with their two hands and they don't care about it. So it was, we really wanted to reflect that in like what we were doing, that we did really care about the cafe that we were building. And I feel that people get that.
Tell me the difference between the cafe and the restaurant.
For us, I think it was an exploration into what we could do next after doing the cafe and seeing the success there. We wanted to branch out and try new things, which meant like trying a full liquor menu and being open for dinner service as well. So that was kind of like the main elevation from the cafe to the restaurant. We wanted them to speak to each other, but we also initially wanted them to be different and sit alone. We wanted them to have the same name, but be two different like explorations of our creativity. And we kind of called it like, the big, more mature sister to the cafe. They still do sit very, very separate from each other, but we've also tried to like mold them, and speak to each other as much as possible. And I think that's kind of the plan for the future as well.
Always do, yeah. Like a different version of the same concept, which is like a place that you can call home. I think like Two Hands Cafe was written by Henry and I, and as we said before, we're not trained chefs, we're just home cooks, and so the food is very much that. It's like homely Australian food. It's stuff that you'd make at home on the fly. It's your avocado toast, it's acai bowls, corn fritters, eggs, scrambled eggs on toast, a quick salad. We do like a bunch of juices and smoothies and just like really simple, healthy, understandable food. And that was the type of food that Henry and I like made for ourselves in New York, and so we figured if we enjoyed eating it every day, then hopefully someone in New York would also. We had enough Australian friends that we felt that maybe they could fill the cafe for the first few days and then maybe more people would come because they saw other people in the cafe, which worked partly. So after that, we thought, well, this isn't really a reflection of what's happening in Australia on a from a food standpoint. There are some incredible cafes in Australia, and we call them cafes, but as far as a New Yorker and like a someone from the States or Europe would be concerned, like, these cafes are restaurants. Mm-hmm. The detail that goes into that food and the thought and the process is insane.
Yeah, Henry, you were saying that makes me think of this, that you're saying that in the States, when people think of Australian cafe, they think it's become like a popular brunch thing. Mm. Specifically, how do you feel about that? Do you want to like change that perception, or are you like, you're like, cool, brunch food's awesome, let's go with it?
Well, I think for us, like, we wanted to create like a community focused cafe, like a, you know, like a kind of where everyone goes in the morning, they feel comfortable, they know the name of the barista that knows their name, knows their order, like that kind of neighborhood spot that isn't just specific to like brunch or like going there for brunch, which is not, like I was mentioning to you earlier, isn't a thing that happens in Australia. Like brunch isn't as big of a thing than it is here.
It's very new. You go back to Australia now and it's like brunch and you're like
mimosas.
That's weird.
Yeah. Like this is just normal. Like you don't have to, that's funny that like so much of what is in Australia is influenced by the States. And it's like, it's impossible not to be influenced by like, you know, the biggest nation culture in the world. But Australian food hasn't been influenced up until the last like 5 years by the States and what they're doing, which made it so amazing. It was like this mixture of Asian and some like Italian and Greek and Spanish. And then also like, some, you know, anywhere, like literally, like Australia is made up of like all the nations of the world, and it, you know, you have like Vietnamese mums, you know, marrying like Argentinian dads, and their like daughter grew up like cooking this like weird fusion food, and then she went to France and learned how to cook there, and then she came back to Australia and made breakfast food, and you had this like incredible mix of everything, but it like how it turned out was just like really produce driven, you know, really thoughtful in like where that produce came and that produce was good for you, and that when you ate it, it tastes good, but then when you left, you felt good. And I think that's something new for New York, which like we're trying to bring to the brunch scene, as opposed to us being categorized as brunch food. It's like, no, hopefully we're recategorizing what brunch is, because the brunch that I ate in New York when I first got here, and I loved because it was so different to Australia, was like waffles and pancakes heavy and bacon and maple syrup and all of this amazing like sugary foods, which for the first 6 weeks is amazing, but then you feel lethargic and you are fat and and you think to yourself, like, why do I feel like so terrible? And it's because you're putting terrible food into your body, and you know, the consequences come pretty shortly afterwards. So what Henry and I wanted to do was just like make healthy food, and if people love that for brunch, then that's epic. We want more and more of that. It's, you know, you spoke briefly during those announcements about like the passion for like getting food from a good place, but also like food waste, and then also like the idea of school lunches and that people should be eating healthy from an early age. Now they're all things that Two Hands cares so much about, and it is the restaurant's responsibility, especially in New York, because everyone is eating at restaurants, to change how people are thinking about food and what they're putting into their mouths, because that's going to change so many aspects of our world for the positive. And so if becoming a brunch spot is what Two Hands has become, then that's amazing. I think that's the best thing.
Charles or Henry, would you say that there is an Australian national cuisine? This is something that, you know, we get asked a lot here as kind of a nation of immigrants. What would you say?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's a tough one to explain when people ask what I do, and I say I own like some restaurants in New York, and they say, what kind of restaurant? Well, it's, you know, it's a tough question to answer. because we're Australian, we obviously have that, you know, and people are looking for a cuisine. But like Giles was saying, it's so multicultural. And because the population of Australia is so small, that those influences resonate so much. So, you know, you can, you know, lamb's obviously a big thing that is eaten in Australia and New Zealand. That isn't so much here. So like a really well done lamb dish is pretty Australian. A barbecue, and not to be kind of confused with the same sort of barbecue that you'd see down south, in Australia, where you just kind of like meat and three veg from the barbecue, is, you know, a pretty common thing as well. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously kangaroo meat, which, you know, to be honest, my mum never cooked for me when I was growing up as a standard kind of dish. And, you know,
kangaroos are pests. It's almost like eating
it
a
is
rat.
A big rodent.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it can be cooked well, and there are some elevated Australian chefs, you know, restaurants and chefs that do really good stuff with that real kind of hardcore bush taco, as we call it.
Like Rene Redzepi was just in Australia and did Noma in Sydney, and like almost redefined what like Australian cuisine was, because he went out there and he like foraged like everywhere from top to bottom, like left to right, up and down, and found some like Australian food that is native to Australia, which I think is incredible. I think, like, to what Henry said, Australia's not, oh, pasta, oh, pizza, oh, ramen. Like, it's produce, that's single ingredients that are really, really like grown well, or, you know, farmed well. So lamb is an example, beef is another example. Much of the beef that we eat in America is potentially from Australia. It's a huge export of Australia. Avocado is another one, which is obvious. But
isn't there a specific kind of like lobster that's very
yabby?
Yabby?
It's like a small kind of like crustacean.
But again, mum never made that. My mum was a fantastic cook, but yeah, that kind of stuff wasn't as...
More restaurant.
Yeah.
And it totally depends on the house that you grew up in, right? Like where your parents like came from, and you know, who your parents were friends with as well. Like I had a lot of like family who were British. So we like ate kind of that like British inspired, like simple food. But then we had, you know, English language students come over and stay at our house, and they were Japanese or Vietnamese or Thai. And so suddenly we'd start eating all this like amazing Asian food, and my mum's cooking would be inspired by that. And I'd go out and like find restaurants in Australia. Like there's much of what's happened in that like Southeast Asian cuisine in Australia is almost totally different to what you find in Thailand. Like a lot of people say Thai food and Vietnamese food is better in Australia. Now it's not better because like we do it better, it's just better because it's different. So I think it's, as opposed to like, oh, there's like one cuisine, it's like a million cuisines turned into like an Australian, like you know, multicultural fusion of everything.
Much like it is here.
Exactly. It's just newer. We're only like, we're 200 years old as versus America, which is over 400 years old, so we're still finding ourselves.
Yeah,
that sounds weird.
Well, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, let's talk more about Australia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Life is what they say. Sun erases. name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta's. All right, we're back. We are back with, I'm sorry, guys, Henry Roberts and Giles Russell. I knew I was going to get like the last name switched somehow. They are from Two Hands, and welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
So I have some Australian friends, and sometimes they tell me about foods that they ate when they were kids, and I can't tell if they were messing with me. So I want to ask you if a couple of things are real.
How do you know we're not going to mess with you?
I hope that you do, actually.
Fair point.
Tell me something like really strange that I can go back to them with, though. Okay. Little boys.
What?
People ate little boys?
Okay. See, I told you that my silly friends said that that was what you call, like, the little cocktail weenies.
Little
you know
boys.
What I'm talking about?
Like teddy bears?
No. Like
teddy bear.
The Vienna sausages. Tiny little sausages.
Yeah.
Oh no, they're called
wieners.
Yes. All right. So they were wrong, my friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I think people would have called them that because
little boys.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like wieners. Yeah.
Sausage rolls.
But that's
no,
wait,
the little ones. I get it.
Isn't a sausage roll with pastry?
They're called little boys because they're little wieners, and so they're little boys. That's totally okay. Something that would have happened. Oh, careful the drink. Oh, okay. What you definitely need to learn about Australia is that anything can be turned into anything, and most things will be turned into some sort of slang about a penis.
Noted.
So that one I can confirm.
Okay, next one. I have another one for you. Fairy bread.
Yeah, that exists. That's a real thing.
Yeah. And it's fucking delicious.
Is fairy bread something that you would serve at Two Hands, maybe on a really nice sourdough?
No, it doesn't. It's
got to be
work.
Bad.
What is it?
Does it have to be Wonder Bread?
It's
on the
Wonder
base?
Bread, yeah. White, sugary bread with
butter.
Butter. Yeah, bad butter, like... Just like margarine.
Like margarine.
Like you can't believe it's not butter margarine.
I can't believe it's
and
not
yeah.
butter.
and hundreds of thousands. Yeah.
And you might have to tell our friends what hundreds of thousands are because we also have a different name for that.
Sprinkles.
Yeah.
Hundreds and thousands.
That's
what?
At every single
birthday party
until you're about 10 years old.
So you get that
sometimes later.
Is that in lieu of cake?
No, there's cake as well. It's a snack before the cake.
Is it, like, would you eat a savory and then fairy bread and then cake?
If fairy bread is at your birthday party, nothing is savory.
Really?
Maybe the little boys that I know.
Yes. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, awesome. So you would just eat, like, candy and fairy bread... Yeah. Maybe some fairy floss.
Diabetes is a full
problem
in Australia.
Yeah, you're so healthy.
We call
in
it lollies.
Lollies.
Yeah.
But what if it's not on a stick?
It's a lollipop.
Or
a Chupa Chump. This is one brand.
Yeah, lollies is everything. Sweets, but mostly lollies.
So, like, if I had a bowl of M&Ms.
They're M&Ms.
That's Chucky.
Chucky. There's not slang
so
for everything.
If I happen to have like an Australian kid's birthday party to throw, it's going to be
just fairy bread.
Hundreds and thousands on
bread.
Fairy bread. Cherry ripe, that's a thing.
Cherry ripe's
yep.
a thing.
Yeah,
Coke
cake.
Bottles, you know the Coke bottles.
The gummy candies.
The wax
gummy
thing?
Candies.
Where you bite off the end and.
Mm-mm. No, it's just a gummy candy
it's
shape.
Just like
a
gummy candy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, cool.
We have all the American
like
candy
sugar
as well.
Overload.
Yeah.
Did you guys do lolly bags? Like when you left the party, you get a lolly bag?
We call them party favors.
Do you put other things other
than
candy?
That sounds sexual.
Does it?
Oh, it is your
I guess it
favor.
Does. You're right.
All right. Well, thank you. That was my Australian slang clarification session. Really appreciate that. Okay, so... there are a number of Australian restaurants in New York these days. I am in the neighborhood of Flinders Lane a lot, where they serve kangaroo and many like typically Australian things.
Do you think that there's a trend towards Australian cafes and restaurants opening here, or is this just because there are millions of restaurants in New York?
I think that it's one and both. To say that Australian food was never represented in America until, I think, 8 Mile Creek, which was on Mulberry Street, which is now closed, was the first. It might not have been, but I'm going to say it was. Mm-hmm. It's the first that I know. And then Ruby's opened, which was like Australian-ish. It served like burgers, which were Australian-inspired. But you wouldn't really find an Australian cafe or restaurant doing what Ruby's did. But it obviously like brought the Australian like cafe culture to New York. And then that like, it was like 10 years went by. And then, like, Flinders Lane opened and Bluestone Lane opened and we opened. And then, like, this explosion of the cafe culture, which is, I think, the most unique to Australia. So, you know, like, there's Ethiopian restaurants and, like, mm-hmm. every single nation in the world almost has, like, a restaurant, you know, represented in New York, especially if it has a strong food culture, which Australia does. So it was only natural for Australians to bring that over. And on top of that, about 10 years ago, give or take, there was like a visa that was created specifically for Australians who...
For the French.
It was apparently stolen from the French because they didn't go to Iraq. And so these visas were given to Australia as a part of like a free trade agreement. And so suddenly Australians had like access to America above and beyond like what they had before. And all you needed was a college education or like 12 years experience in your field. And that just made it really easy for Australians to jump over the pond.
The pond.
Yeah. So to speak. And bring like New York, our style of food, which I think is really exciting because you've seen the cafe culture in the last 5 years, but hopefully what you see in the next, you know, 5, 10, you know, forever, as long as this visa exists. scary. is the other, you know, other types of Australian food. Flinders Lane does like a nice mix of a little of everything, but you know, Australian style Vietnamese, Australian style Thai food. I mean, Momofuku went to Australia and did Japanese. Now there's a totally different type of Japanese that is in Australia. Like Sushi Train is like a whole different thing in Australia to what is in New York. So hopefully that, you know, that all comes over mm-hmm. soon as well, because you know, the more good food, the merrier.
I agree.
And along with the cafe culture, curious what you guys do at Two Hands. Do you allow tipping? Do you encourage tipping? Do you have any policies? And what do you think about the kind of baby movement that's happening here?
No comment.
I'm joking. Nah, we obviously come from a no tipping culture, and now with our opening a business here and dealing with the tipping system, we definitely the both of us definitely think that there is a better system, and that is the system that's kind of evolving at the moment, you know, through Danny Meyer and such, and so. We're kind of still doing our research and looking into it. But, you know, from a business standpoint, managerial standpoint, I think it's definitely easier for restaurants as the time goes on and as we become more experienced, that the hospitality included system is probably a better system. Mm-hmm.
Because it equally rewards both sides. Mm-hmm. And I think from growing up in Australia, we get paid like so luckily, like an exceedingly high minimum wage. It's very expensive to live in Australia, but you know, we're lucky enough that like straight out of school, 18 years old, you're making $20 an hour in a cafe. Now you're not making many tips on top of that, but to know that you're definitely making $20 an hour means that you know that you're going to be able to afford rent and food and et cetera, et cetera. What is difficult to understand in New York is that we continue to expect amazing food, yet we continue to like punish the people that are making it. Mm-hmm. The people that are making it, at the end of the day, if they didn't exist, we wouldn't even be going to the restaurants. The server's job is to serve their food. Mm-hmm. Now, to encourage these people to make a career out of making amazing food, paying them $11 an hour for the first 10 years of their career, unless they're incredibly dedicated, they're just going to drop out and do something else. And so I think there needs to be a serious rethink of how we reward this industry, because we're going to quickly find that people are dropping it. We are finding that people are like dropping out of this profession, and it's really hard to find good cooks. And so if servers deserve to make, you know, the amount of money than they make, then it's 50-50, the back of house cooks and prep cooks and dishwashers and all of those people should be able to make the same. And so we're working on how we make that work at Two Hands, because we do believe that that's the fairest way to do it.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best.
Thank you.
And anything that we can do to help around, you know, changing that culture. I think it's a conversation that we have a lot here. And we've spoken to a lot of people who have tried no tipping, maybe come back from no tipping, are about to try it. But I think it's really important for kind of people who are in the restaurant management side of things to be able to talk to each other too, figure out how we're going to do it. I feel like New York is going to be the kind of epicenter of where this starts.
It's going to be the tipping point. Like if we do it first, and it'll take like Danny Meyer and Andrew Tyler and like EMP, like they all did it first and they can do it because they have the sway and people will go there regardless. Now it's going to take that middle ground of restaurants like doing it, and it's so risky, and it like for a restaurant that already like, you know, runs quite well with the tipping system, it's, you know, it's a big step to be like, hey, I'm going to completely change it. And it's a cultural thing as well. Like we do a lot of talking to like our guests and the people who come to Two Hands regularly about it, and a lot of people just, they grew up like tipping, and so that's what they want to do, and they have a misunderstanding of like how people are rewarded and where those tips go and why they tip. And I think the laws have been in place for so long that the culture has become misunderstood. It's people don't really understand like why they tip, and so it's going to take like the businesses to, you know, really take that big step forward and take that risk for us to then change how the laws are written. And once the laws are written, like, then you'll see everyone change.
One day. I have one more question for you, and then we'll do some trivia. You guys have very striking Instagram images, which I love your Instagram feed. Do you think that having like really striking photography and social media plays a big role in bringing people into your restaurant, whether it's new people or repeat people who see like, oh yeah, that looks awesome, I'm going to go again?
I mean, for us, we feel like when we opened the cafe 3 years ago, we hit the time when the whole like food, Instagram, social media thing was just like exploding. People standing on chairs taking pictures of their food and like all that shit.
Gotta get high.
Hello.
Everyone's a food photographer.
Yeah, and so we actually, you know, not being photographers ourselves, we just would repost other customers' photos that were, you know, of good quality. And that created this sense of community for people that would come in and, you know, we'd be, you know, showcasing their photography and thanking them for coming in or whatever. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And so we still to this day, you know, we go through our feed and, you know, we pick the kind of best photos that other people are taking, customers are actually taking of our food. The odd photo we take of ourselves, of our food or whatnot, is pretty minuscule in what we actually post or, you know, sort of spend a lot of time on. So it is, you know, I think for the first couple of years it was kind of all we did for a PR standpoint, for, you know, promotional standpoint. Like it was all coming through Instagram. You know, we had
it's awesome because it's free.
Yeah. We had this like shitty little, you know, website that, you know, did what it did, and, you know, that was kind of it was all through Instagram. If we were closed, if we were open, if we had something on, or if we, you know, were doing something new or had an event or whatever, it was all going through Instagram. And
I think it was great because it tapped into the age group that we were speaking to as well, more than any other like media. Suddenly, like, you had 16 to 24 year olds who prided themselves so much on like being up to date with the newest, coolest thing, and latte art and colorful food was at that point in time like just it. It was everyone was about it, and being on Instagram and taking photos and showing people that you were at this cafe and taking cool photos was just like the number one thing for these young kids to do. And what I mean, Henry and I were so blown away that people would come like all the way, you know, they came from like the Bronx and Philadelphia and, you know, like deep wherever they were from to like take these photos and, you know, and eat the food. That was a big part of it as well. Eventually.
Secondary.
Eventually. But that they would like pride themselves on the fact that they'd come to our restaurant and that they would want to show their followers, whether small or large, that they'd been there. That's like, that was a big pat on the back for Henry and I, because, we wanted to thank every single person that walked into the cafe for those first like months and even now it's a big deal. And Instagram's such a positive, from what I've seen, like form of advertising. Like no one's posting, oh, I just went to like this terrible restaurant and like this
That's
is the food
true.
I got, or like I went on this terrible holiday, or look at my like terrible body. Like everyone's like showing their best face.
That's and true.
Which
so
is
true.
Which
positives
is,
and negatives from that, but yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But you know, like people are like, hey, this is what I'm doing and I'm proud of it. So like
it's not like Yelp where you're having to like monitor bad things coming through on it.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And so that was, you know, that was really encouraging for Henry and I, and it was also like a really cool way to extend our community beyond the four walls of our restaurant, so that like once someone left, it was like, okay, we can repost your photo and we can speak to you and we can like, you know, we can have a conversation. And it suddenly became like two hands is like digital community, which is really, really special. And you know, we've done like little Instagram like competitions and meetups and whatnot like since it started, and we've really found like great value in the platform that is Instagram. And I feel very, very lucky that what happened the way that it did, and it was able to grow as it has.
That's awesome. I love that. All right, well, we have a couple of quick trivia questions for you guys, and then we're gonna wrap up.
Is it a competition between the two of us?
Sure. Yeah. It's best two out of three. Okay, I'm going to go a little out of order here. What type of Australian cuisine does the term bush tucker refer to?
Witchetty grubs.
What?
Kangaroo? That's not wrong.
No, I don't think it's wrong.
What did he want?
Aboriginal?
Witchetty grub.
Yes. Is that the same thing?
Well, they eat witchetty grubs.
No.
No.
I don't know what that term means.
Witchetty grub is like a little
protein snack.
I guess it's like a caterpillar. I guess it's like the closest thing you could call to a caterpillar. Huh. It's like a white bug, and it's about maybe 2-3 inches long and like an inch thick. And you find them in like trees and whatnot. And so it's like a native, like Aboriginal like snack.
Cool. So, bush tucker means like bush food or any food native to Australia and used for food or medicine by Aboriginal Australians. Yeah. Cool.
Good. One to Henry.
What was the name of the massive supercontinent that Australia was once part of?
Utopia. I don't know.
Is it,
No, I've got nothing.
Starts with a G.
It's cheating to just be like Pangea.
Genesis.
It's
like, not that.
The great album.
It's Gondwanaland.
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah. I've heard that.
Is that something that you learn in like fourth grade or something?
It's something you hear.
Oh, okay.
Like around the traps.
Yeah.
This is obscure trivia.
We try. All right, last question. What are the key ingredients of a lamington?
Coconut.
Chocolate, coconut, and
flour, obviously.
Like
strawberry jam.
Sponge cake.
Yeah. Henry wins. Yay.
It's like I wasn't even here.
So tell us, Henry, what is a lamington?
Well, a lamington is kind of like fairy bread. It's a very common party treat. And it is like sponge cake. And you can do it a couple of different ways, but sponge cake with like a chocolate kind of like icing. With coconut sprinkled on top.
Sounds and it's strawberry jam in the middle.
And it kind of comes in like a square or a rectangle. And yeah, it can have like strawberry and cream in the middle, like, you
layered,
know,
yeah.
Layered. And
it sounds kind of like Entenmann's. No?
Yeah, thank you.
Is it British?
It's like a Twinkie.
Australian thing.
I mean, I think it's an Australian
that
thing.
That too, yeah.
Everything that is Australian, someone could say it was British.
Well,
that's
yeah.
where everyone started.
Fair enough. Well, thank you. That has been, it's been a very, very educational hour.
What I've learned is that you say you eat a lot of healthy food, but you also have some, like,
you know, a lot about
masterful junk food.
No, yeah. Obesity is a big problem in Australia. Second to America. I'm not joking. It might even be first.
It's wow. just
might
the kids,
have even
though.
Taken
it's
the gold like, medal in that.
It's just the kids.
The kids are getting fat.
It's like any like poor education, you know.
Chippies.
Oh yeah.
Hot chips Coca-Cola. With a little bit of vinegar.
Mm, the Coke.
Hello.
Well, you have such cute names for all the snack food. I don't think it's helping.
Yeah, that's the problem. All right. Well, Henry, Giles, thank you so much for joining us. This
thank
has been a blast.
Us.
I feel like I know so much more about Australia now. I'm Kat Johnson.
I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler. This has been HR and Happy Hour.
That's our show. See you next week.
Thanks to our producers, Liz Mystic, Hannah Forden, and our engineer, Dave Tadashore. We learned from Carrie. He's the only reason we keep coming back.
All right, see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Fresh Pickings is a podcast by Heritage Radio Network presented by Bob's Red Mill. Love learning about food? Get more superfood for your brain with the featured podcast miniseries, Fresh Pickings. Go to bobsredmill.com/freshpickings.
If I offered you a bag of Nooch or a sprinkle of hippie dust, would you take it? If you're a pizza-loving vegan, you probably would. Today on Fresh Pickings, nutritional yeast and its various street names. What it is and why you should be putting it on your popcorn next time you go to the movies. Today I'll chat with Dave Arnold, co-host of Cooking Issues here on HRN, about what nutritional yeast actually is and what it is not. Then VLGL blogger Elizabeth Taylor is back to give us a recipe that uses nutritional yeast and, for a bonus, chickpea flour. I'm your host, Kat Johnson. Thanks for joining us. So when I think of an every food topping, I'm usually thinking about Parm. Parmesan cheese, Parmesan on pizza, on pasta, on a crunchy Caesar salad, even on my eggs in the morning. Or I might be thinking about ketchup, because some people put ketchup on all of those things too. But what if cheese isn't your thing? Or we can all agree that ketchup on salad is pretty gross. Or what if it's just time to change things up a bit? Now, don't get me wrong, Parmesan will never go out of style, and ketchup and fries belong together. But variety is the spice of life. So getting in on nutritional yeast is a great way to add some spice and umami to your life.
So variety, that's great and all, and I know what yeast is, but what is nutritional yeast? It doesn't sound very food-like.
This is David, our engineer, and that's a great question, David. So nutritional yeast is sort of like vegan cheese. It goes great on popcorn, and you can make vegan mac and cheese with it, but it's flaky. The folks over at Bon Appetit magazine called it nature's Cheeto dust, but unlike Cheetos, this is actually good for you.
That sounds intriguing. Still not sure what it is, though.
Okay, if you can't be convinced by my flaky, umami, cheese-like goodness description and that it goes on everything, then I'm going to have to get an expert to weigh in. I'm all about flavor, but not so much about specifics. So I'm going to check in with Dave Arnold of Cooking Issues to find out more.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold of Cooking Issues, and I have a lot to say about nutritional yeast, and that goes way beyond Kat's accurate and tantalizing but pretty vague description.
Okay, great. I needed someone to step in here. Thanks, Dave. Can you please explain what this stuff actually is?
All right, despite the strange name, it's definitely food. So nutritional yeast is the deactivated, you know, dead, they've killed it, form of Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Now, that's basically the same yeast that you would use to make bread, to make beer. So it's definitely common. It's not some weird, like, funky thing. It's like almost all the good things we like to eat or drink it's involved with. Not almost, but, you know, a lot of the good things we like to eat or drink are involved with it. So the way it's produced is first you culture to grow it in a warm, sweet medium the same way that they would do when they're making beer or as a first start to whiskey. Then after it grows, they kill it, basically, and dry it out. And you could use it that way.
So is it nutritious?
Well, if you believe in nutrition as a form of measuring foodstuffs rather than just deliciousness, then yes. I mean, remember, it's a complete organism. So it's got, you know, a lot of protein. So a quarter cup of it, which is quite a bit, actually, a quarter cup of yeast. But that's 8 grams of protein, 3 grams of fiber, and 5 grams of carbohydrates. That's off the back of the package. I don't know that stuff off the top of my head. It has lots of micronutrients like thiamine, niacin, riboflavin, B6, B12, zinc, folate. You know, so it's also something good for, you know, vegans who can't get a lot of those things out of because they're not getting a animal-based diets or dairy-based diet. So it's good to get those things that are sometimes hard to get out of straight plant foods.
So why does it taste savory and meaty?
Well, yeast, and so, like, there's a bunch of different kinds of yeast, and yeast is actually one of the things that's used in commercial foods to provide meaty taste. Different, but, you know, it's broken down to certain degrees. So the protein in yeast, once it's, like, autolyzed or broken up, and a lot of yeast, after it grows and starts dying, will self-autolyze, right? So it can produce a wide variety of flavors, but protein breakdown products in particular from yeast can produce meaty aroma, meaty flavors, rather.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Taylor, the creator of food blog VLGL.cooking. Today I have a recipe that uses not just one, but two of my favorite Bob's Red Mill products, chickpea flour and, of course, nutritional yeast.
I'm so excited to have Elizabeth Taylor back to share another recipe with us. Elizabeth runs the blog VLGL.cooking, which is her collection of vegan, low glycemic load culinary creations. In the last episode, Elizabeth explained the VLGL eating philosophy and gave us a killer recipe for grain-free granola. Let's see what she brought today. So, Elizabeth, Bob's Red Mill makes a lot of products that fit into the VLGL philosophy, don't they?
They sure do, Kat. In addition to being low glycemic, meaning that it won't cause a spike in blood sugar, chickpea flour is packed with plant-based protein, iron, selenium, and folate. Chickpea flour has a mild, earthy flavor, and I love to use it for all kinds of savory dishes like this chickpea flour omelet recipe. When you mix chickpea flour with water, spices, and baking soda and heat this mixture in a lightly oiled pan, it transforms into a hearty dish that can be enjoyed at any time of the day. These chickpea flour omelets are denser and more bread-like than an egg omelet, yet richer and sturdier than a crepe. They're great with savory veggies, and my recipe uses kale and juicy grilled tomatoes with chipotle powder.
That sounds really delicious. So how are you using the nutritional yeast in this recipe?
Nutritional yeast is one of my go-to seasonings. It brings true savory magic to vegan food. In this recipe, I use it to season the chickpea flour omelet for an umami flavor.
Thanks so much to Dave Arnold for the yeasty science lesson and to Elizabeth Taylor for sharing her tips for using nutritional yeast. You can find her recipe for the chickpea flour omelet with chipotle grilled tomatoes at bobsredmill.com/freshpickings. Well, that's just about everything you could want to know about nutritional yeast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check out our other episodes of Fresh Pickings and learn more about Bob's Red Mill's favorite ingredients, including some delicious recipes and great coupon offers, by going to bobsredmill.com/freshpickings. Bob's Red Mill believes in good food for all. For Heritage Radio Network, I'm your host, Kat Johnson. Thanks for joining us.